Welcome to the Real Talk of Dental, where we pull back the bib and talk about what's really going on beneath the surface. Not just the charts, not just the systems. We're talking about the culture, the chaos, and the confessions. I'm Brandy Marzolino, and with 20 years deep in this industry, I am fresh out of patience for performative leadership. This is your space to laugh, cry, question everything, and maybe shout into a pillow between patients. We've got anonymous confessions, we've got call-ins, we've got ops room drama, and we've got the truth, served hot and a little too real. Think of this as your backstage pass to the break room no one dares to mic. Until now. Imagine 42 years ago, you were working as a dental assistant, just starting out in your career, when wearing latex gloves was not required. You learn from the health department that a patient you were treating has come down with hepatitis, and now you need to be treated for it as well. Then comes a whole bunch of meds and injections and a whole bunch of other things so that you don't come down with hepatitis. Well, that is the origin story of Cherie Busby, who now is a renowned infection control expert and trainer in the dental industry. She has quite the past in dental and has been around for a long time to have all the war stories and the humor and joy to talk about it. We dive into infection control, why training is so important, and why training gets overlooked so often in dental offices, especially when it comes to assistants who are truly the backbone of a lot of dental offices, and even recognizing how dentists don't get any kind of infection control training in dental school. Cherie is hilarious and she's very spirited, and something that I love about her is her tenacity and her grit and her commitment to continued education, and even her advocacy for the work that I do with empowering women in the dental industry through my empowered leadership experience for women in dental, because the learning never stops. And we're not too proud to say that we are students ongoingly, both in life and work. Cherie is nonstop. She's full of information and she is full of so much wisdom. And I'm really grateful to have her on today's episode. Enjoy. Cherie Busby, 42 years in dentistry is incredible. And you have been there, done that, seen it all, got the t-shirt, still here to talk about it. And like you said, you are on career number 3 in this industry. And so you've been through so much. You are well known in the industry for your training, and especially with infection control and all kinds of measures in keeping patients and team members safe. I want to dive in. What is one of the more memorable stories that you have from your 42 years in dentistry?
Oh my goodness gracious. Where do I start? I'm going to start 42 years ago. So back in my day, we didn't wear gloves. I know I can see people going, oh, horrified, right? But we didn't wear gloves. We didn't really have PPE or anything like that. And one afternoon, we got a call from the health department that said that our patient that we had seen like a couple of weeks before had turned out to be hepatitis B positive. So I have had to go through this medicine, gamma globulin or blah, 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 whatever this medicine was. I don't remember. But anyway, so I went through this medicine and I remember that they had to give me these injections in my stomach. And honest to God, I felt like that needle was about this long and, you know, like in a cartoon kind of thing. But that experience actually started my curiosity, if you will, with infection control, because I had a firsthand exposure to something that had the potential to make me very sick, right? So that kind of started my infection control interest way back in the day before infection control was a mainstream thing. So that was like one of the most memorable. I have lots of others, but at the drop of my head, I'll have to think about it for a second.
Yeah, no, that is incredibly memorable. And how soon was everyone required to start wearing gloves? Like how far into career did that change?
I want to say about 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
Maybe four years, because it was in the early to mid 80s. That's when HIV started, right? When HIV became a thing and we learned about it. And so shortly after that, the CDC and OSHA started developing guidelines to keep workers safe. And so PPE was born during that time. I think PPE had been around, but not in the little backdoor office that I was working in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was very backdoor. So it wasn't in my office because we were, the doctor was like, I don't know if he was poor or if he was just stingy. I'm not sure which, but anyway, so it was shortly after that that we started with it.
Yeah. Gosh. And it's always so interesting because we see where things are today. And, you know, oftentimes we forget how not that long ago things were radically different or not as safe. I mean, it can be, you know, a variety of things. You know, I think even growing up for me, we were driving around in cars that were just death traps and where things are today, right? And it's really not that long ago. I mean, I'm not that young, but still, it's in the scheme of things, it's not that long ago. And it just has me thinking, you know, where do you think safety in dentistry is today? Do you think we still have a long ways to go? I mean, clearly we've made substantial progress, but do you think there's just still so much more to go?
I think that the framework is there, like laid out. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing framework to follow. The OSHA and CDC laid out the guidelines, and now our friends from the ADS, Association for Dental Safety, they're picking up the reins for the dental side of that. So they've laid out the groundwork, but where are we lacking, or where we lack, is education. And you knew I was going to go there because this is where my heart speaks, is education. But do you know that dentists coming out of school, or even a doctor for that matter, they have no infection control training?
No, I did not know that.
Very, very, well, I'll say no, zero, but very, very little. So I would talk to all these doctors that were just out of school and we're talking about infection control. And I'm like, well, didn't you get that in your class? And they're like, we didn't have a class on this. Like they have none. And so a hygienist will get it. And then a dental assistant, if they go to school, then there's some infection control training in school, right? But what happens is we get out in the world and we learn from each other. To be honest, I know you said that it's when you entered, said we first started, you said I was all over all the things that I could share. And I'm telling you, I should be underneath the basement of the second level basement of OSHA jail right now from all the infection control things, naughty things that I did in my career that I had no idea. So while the structure is there and outlined in very easy to read formats, they don't know where to go get the information. And then everything is subject to interpretation, just like what goes into the biohazard waste is very subject to interpretation, right? So education is where we lack.
Yeah, it's so fascinating to me as far as dental school, what they teach and what they don't teach. I mean, I get it to some degree, but man, there's so much more that needs to be learned, you know, when someone finishes dental school and then the fear that they're going out and hanging up their shingle and starting a practice. I mean, I know that's not as common these days as it once was, but I spent a lot of time recently at Chicago Midwinter with our buddy Landon. And, you know, I was learning too that it blew me away that dentists aren't required to test their water lines. Like it's not an actual requirement, which blew me away. Yeah, just two states, he said. And he said 80% of dentists don't test their water. And I couldn't believe it. And it's such a huge part of dental operations. And then there's assistants and hygienists that maybe have the awareness of it, like you're saying, they're learning some of these things. But then to have the courage and speak up again and again to their bosses or the operators of the business and demand these types of things when they feel kind of disempowered or that they're not in the position to ask for these things. I can see where the trouble lies. And I guess why from a legality perspective is something like that not the law yet?
Money, for one thing, right? Everything boils down to money and the legal action, or I don't know how to say this, the powers that be, well, let's call it that. They don't want to rock the boat with their constituents, right? So we know anything to get passed through legislation is terribly difficult. Like it costs millions and millions of dollars to get anything passed. And so it's very unfortunate that it takes tragedy sometimes to make things happen. Like we're talking about water. It took children in Georgia very recently, getting very, very ill to make him pass a state, even though it originally started in California. And, you know, California still doesn't have anything in law yet, even though that was where it started, the awareness of dental unit water lines. So it takes a long time to get that stuff. And then even though the companies, like our friend Landon from DentistSafe, even though they're trying to make it very cost effective to do it, it's still an additional cost. Dentistry is an expensive business. Mm-hmm. Very expensive, right? So you have to kind of weigh everything like that. And then if it's not a law, then like nothing, it won't happen to me kind of attitude is out there, you know? So it's just an unfortunate thing that it takes time.
Yeah. And from the education perspective, I know that's something that you're super passionate about and you're an incredible trainer. And like you said, that's something that
you
are really passionate about and so knowledgeable about. So how long have you been in the role as educator and trainer?
I've always been a mentor. I've always been a trainer because I learned early on that I'm like a sponge. I want to know things. And then back in my early days, education was very hard to get. Like we had to be scrappy and we had to go out and get our education. And so I was the scrappy one. And so I would bring it back to my office and then share what I learned with my team, right? So I started mentoring like way, way early, like in my 20s, I started mentoring. And then as time progressed, I just kept mentoring local people, mostly in my office, some neighboring offices and stuff like that. It wasn't until I joined Heartland Dental that I became a true titled educator, I guess I could put it that way, right? So I joined Heartland Dental and they asked me, they said, so we want you to come and do dental assistant education. And I'm like, you know, I'm a dental assistant, right? Like I know teeth. I don't know how to put a PowerPoint together or write a class or anything there. They're like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine, whatever. And so it wasn't until that point. And so I guess I've been truly focused on education in a large scale for like maybe 15 years or so, because I held that position in Heartland Dental for 11, but I was mentoring in a large region before that.
Yeah.
So, but I've always been a mentor. I've always been a teacher.
Yeah. It runs in your veins for sure. Yeah. Wherever you go. Yeah. Which is one of the things I love about you. Hey, I just want to pop in on today's episode and talk to you about this new GPT I wrote called Boundary Boss GPT. And it's for those moments where you've said yes to something and immediately felt that pit in your stomach, or maybe you've now written 5 drafts of an email because you're trying not to sound mean, even though you're exhausted and you swear you've said this thing so many times to the same person, or you're kind of sick and tired of staying late, taking it on, smoothing things over, and wonder why you're the one that's always burning out. A lot of the conversations that I have on this podcast, we often hear about people hitting these walls of burnout and oftentimes not even knowing what to say. So that's why I built Boundary Boss GPT. It's kind of like having me in your pocket when you're about to respond to a text, email, or team issue, and you just don't know what to say because your people-pleasing brain is completely hijacking you. This is going to help you have clarity, confidence, and self-respect without the guilt, over-explaining, or the drama. Go ahead and grab it in the show notes below. It's totally free, and you're going to love it. Okay, now back to this awesome conversation. So what do you think are some of the biggest gaps you see as you've been training for, decades, it sounds like? What do you think are some of the biggest gaps that you've seen as you've been sharing your wisdom with people as far as like blocks or knowing versus implementing, gaps in the sense of people going, oh my God, I had no idea about that? Like what's your experience from the training side?
Well, there's so much misknowledge, or I guess misknowledge is a good way to say that, right? Because we learn from each other. Mm. And like I said earlier, I should be under the OSHA jail because I learned how to do things from each other. And because there's no regulatory training requirements, we continue to learn from each other, right? So you just mentioned that we were at Chicago Midwinter together. It was such a great time. I loved that. But if you think about how many offices don't take their teams to Chicago Midwinter to get those classes. There was so many doctors that go to get classes, but they don't take their team, right? So there's not a whole lot of team education. Maybe there's not a lot of value. I think it's really value placed on education for the doctors. So that's a huge gap, right there. And then as far as procedures, then I think that if we could just teach dental assistants, hygienists do somewhat better, but if we could just teach dental assistants in a consistent manner for infection control nationwide, holy cow, right there. The rest of the technical skills that a dental assistant does when they're helping the doctor themselves, they learn with their doctor together. You know what I mean? But because the doctor doesn't have good foundational infection control training, how can they train their team on that stuff too? So there is a gap in that education availability. I'm saying that not that it's not available, but that dental assistants specifically are not afforded the opportunity to learn while they're on the job, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And my example is here is like I participated with my team and we wrote training for onboarding, like new hires. And there was only like 50% completion and we brought it down to a 6-week program. And there was still only about 50% completion of the program. And so there might be higher now, you know, because I am retired from there. But at my day, it was we were happy with 50%. Mm-hmm. So that means that the new dental assistant came into the office and they're expected to hit the ground running, but they're not afforded the opportunity to get the education that they need. And that's why they leave, because they're overwhelmed. They don't feel listened to. Somebody's fussing at them all the time because they don't know what to do. But we didn't train them properly. We didn't onboard them properly. And even though I've been a dental assistant my whole adult life, actually, I was a very small child when I started. So we'll just say my entire life, right? Because I was a baby in that 42 years. But I cannot go into somebody's office today and hit the ground running because I don't know how that office runs. I don't know how what that doctor's expectations are. So unless they take the time to sit down and talk to me and share those expectations, there's no way I'm going to learn, right? So that is a huge gap. Like that's a 4-lane highway gap that we have in the industry. And really, holy cow, do you know that before you can make a chicken sandwich at Chick-fil-A, they've got 6 weeks of intensive training before you even make the first chicken sandwich? Mm. Why can't our industry work just like Chick-fil-A? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's a huge gap in the education is there. You can get free education. There is dentalcare.com. There's Viva Learning. There's getting on all kinds of webinars that you can get on. The ADS is having a webinar I'm going to do for them in April. That's free. Mm-hmm. You can join these webinars. So the education is out there, but are they a lot afforded the time? And you know, and I haven't seen a stat that you have to pay people when they are doing a job-related task. So there's not time during the day to say, okay, I'm going to close down this column for this hour and a half so you can go, my team can go and watch a webinar and learn something, right? No, we need to pay the bills. We need our patients need our time for that. So you have to, most often it's done at after hours time, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't want to pay for after hours time, even though they should be paying for that. So it's like a, I hope I'm saying this correctly. I'm sure somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a federally mandated thing. You have to pay people for the work that they do, and education falls under that blanket. So it's a huge 4-lane highway gap that goes through there.
I love that. I love that you're pointing that out because I hear this a lot, even with like front office stuff when it comes to practice management software. And I mean, same thing with the clinical teams that use it as well. They get trained and like you're saying, people can get trained on bad habits that have been like passed down from their predecessors, right? And they don't know any different. So say someone is like, oh yeah, they learned a shortcut somewhere along the way. And they go, oh, you do, you know, you click here and do this, this, and this. And then they train their person. Oh yeah, you just do this, this, and this. And then they train that for, yeah, you just do this, this, and this. Well, little do they know it's incorrect, right? Or it's like compounding, you know, when it comes to managing patient records or something like that. And then all of a sudden, an office might be looking to sell or who knows, change practice management software or something. Who, you know, something happens where all of a sudden they end up uncovering this right. Bee's nest of like issues, right? At a systemic level. And it's just like, how the hell did we get here? And like you're saying, it's just passed down these ways of doing things that it, and a lot of times it's completely harmless. Like they think they're doing the right thing, but they're passing down like
they do. Nobody goes into it with ill intent.
No.
Nobody. Yeah. We're doing what we know to be correct. And we're passing on what we feel, what we know is the right thing. And you know, when you have, well, just use practice management software as an example. You get that new software, they're going to trade you crazy amount. They're going to train you so well on all the things that software does, right? All the things. Well, do you know in this country, we're looking at, let's say, 30% team turnover at any given time.
Right.
So the original team got that training on that software, but now you're down like 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road. Holy cow, half of your team is now, or a third of your team, let's put it that way, has now been replaced by new people. Do the people who got that training remember everything? They do not, because it's so much training. Like the software is just so vast, right? And I know I used to be very familiar with Eaglesoft, but now I do Dentrix, right? So do you know there's 12 ways from Sunday to do something in Dentrix?
Yes.
All of them will get you there, but there's some more efficient ways. And the trainer had told him this is the best way to go. But we don't remember. So we go find our shortcuts. We go find those ways. And we've gotten so far away from that. And then like, oh my God, I did not know that all of my unscheduled treatment was going on to this unscheduled treatment list. And now look at it. It's like 25,000 pages long because we don't know how to use that list.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's just a huge gap in the training. And a lot of it is because of the turnover that happens. And turnover has to do with a lot of things, right? Not just education. It has to do like, how is the environment of the office? I know that you are so much a proponent for courage and joy at work, right? Being happy with what you do. And when you're in the day-to-day struggle and everything, maybe you're unhappy and then your bad mood spills off onto somebody else. And the next time you know, your culture in your office is not really what you wanted it to be, right? And so people will leave that. And then when they do their exit interview, they're going to go, why did you leave? And they're like, because I didn't know what to do. Nobody trained me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it creates this huge 4-lane highway gap that follows us through our careers. And if we could close that gap, I personally feel that when you get a team, if you talk to a doctor and says, what makes your team great? He says, they work together. They support each other. They know what to do. They know what the other person's job is so they can step in and help, right?
Mm-hmm.
That takes training because I can't step in and help you if I don't know what to do.
Right.
Right? It's training to do that.
And I think too, one of the big things is like training with experts too, right? I think that's something I've been seeing more and more of as well, which is the team members are going to say, I don't have time to train. You hear that? I hear that all the time, right? And they don't, right? They're swamped. They have a million things going on, you know, especially assistants, right? They're running from one room to the other. And usually the best team members that you want training are usually the ones that are really busy as well, right? Running around and doing a bunch of things. And so I hear that a lot of like, when the heck do you expect me to train these people? And how am I supposed to create a training manual? And how am I supposed to take time and, you know, show them every little thing for weeks when I need to be chairside with the doc and the doc needs them chairside because, you know, they're their go-to assistant for these procedures, et cetera, et cetera. So I know a lot of people have been talking about, well, bring in people to do the training for you because the team doesn't have the time. So help me connect the dots a little bit. Like, one, is that your recommendation? Or if it's not, how do offices train internally? And three, if they do bring in someone from the outside, how does that person really understand the nuance of what that office needs when it comes to training? So like if you're training an assistant, so this is an infection control stuff, but just the nuance of like that office, right? Being chairside with the doctors and the providers, like what's the best protocol, would you say?
So I think it's a combination, right? I feel like you need to have an expert. Let's just go back to practice management software, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to have an expert who knows that software upside down and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have level of expertise, but you also have to have team involvement. Training is not a one person show, not a one woman, not a one man. It's not a one person show. Training is a team event, if you will, because just like you said, a consultant or a trainer can come into your practice and I can tell you things that would make your practice better. Like using your software to the advantage, right? And this is kind of a little deviant, but it's an irrelevant story.
Yeah.
I was training in an office here in Florida, and the doctor was like, they're struggling with their charting, like their charting. So I'm like, do you guys not know that you can use procedure code buttons and hot buttons and Dentrix to make your charting so much easier? And they're like, no, this is how we do it. I'm like, I promise, if you'll let me set up some of these hot buttons, I can show you how to chart this. So this doctor, he's like, well, okay, you go do that, and then I'm going to test you. I'm like, okay. So we did this exam together, and he is on purpose, like speeding, like Speedy McGraw through this exam, right? Like he would never, in real life, he would have never gone that fast. But let me tell you, because I know how to use procedure code buttons and I know how to use hot buttons, I was up with him. I had every single thing he said. By the time he said the last thing, I had it charted.
Love it.
He was amazed because he brought in an expert. I wouldn't call myself an expert, but he brought in somebody who knows what they're doing, right? Yeah. Okay, I'm an expert. So he brought in somebody, though. You have to have that expertise as somebody to show you what the possibilities are, if you will, right? But then I had to work with his team to get what they wanted on those procedure code buttons. Just because I made them doesn't mean that that's how he actually charts together. Like there were some things I had to do manually outside of a button. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's just that kind of thing. And then when you have that turnover, you have established a good protocol. So it's a combination. And maybe every once in a while, you need to have that expert come back in and just do like a lunch and learn. Or something small versus over like a large thing. But it needs to be a team thing, because if you're cross training, I need my hygienist to be willing to teach that dental assistant, this is how we do perio charting. And these are the things that I'm going to call out. And this is why these numbers are important. This is how you use the software to mark charting to mark bleeding and mobility and all those kind of things, right? So the hygienist will be the one to come in and show that person that she's asking to help. Or the office manager may be the one to come in and show like, okay, here is, I have a new business team member. I want to show you how to make an appointment, or I want to show you how to follow up with that unscheduled treatment list that kind of populates all by itself. You know what I mean? So it takes that combination of the two things. And how can you make it scalable? You want to have an SOP. You want to have a training plan. Your consultant, your expert, more than likely will have some sort of plan already pre-made. So it's not like you have to go and write it down yourself. Right? There's all kinds of resources out there. I love Google. Like I Google everything. My husband's like, he'll ask me a question. I'm like, I don't know. Let's ask Google, right? So I'm Googling everything. You can find training plans. You can go into ChatGPT or a Copilot and say, create me a training plan for a brand new dental assistant coming into my practice. And it will outline it for you. So we have technology that we can take advantage of. Is it going to be completely right? Well, no, it's not. And then the third thing, like we ask, how can we keep the ball rolling and keep it customized to the office? I strongly feel like it's on the trainee, the student, the new dental assistant, if you will, to take control of their education themselves. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's Z. We are not going to come and spoon. There's not somebody to spoon feed you, right? You have to take control yourself. So you have to take some ownership of that education. And I'm a firmly believe, like if you want to know what the doctor sees on an x-ray, well, take an FMX and take that FMX to the doctor and say, hey, how did I do? Are these diagnostic quality? Are they good enough for you? What do you see here? What would you recommend in this case? And how do you want me to talk to the patient about it?
I love
right?
that.
You are learning what you're getting graded, basically, we'll say graded on your skill, but you're learning what their expectations are and how to handle the patients from those things, right? So that comes from, and you do those things a little bit at a time. You don't have to do it all at once. Break it out. Just get one thing. You could say, okay, as a dental assistant, I'm used to making temporaries, but I don't know, how does this doctor want? Does he like really tight occlusion? Do they want to have the contacts to be really tight? Do they want it light occlusion? Do they want no occlusion? Whatever, whatever. So I'll make my temporary, then I'll go get my doctor, said, hey, can you come and check this out for me and make sure that it's meeting all your criteria? So you know what you've done? You have invited that doctor into your educational space, if you will, and asked them for their help. They are not going to tell you no. I don't care who you are. When you go and ask somebody for help, 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, yes, I can do that. They may say, yes, but I need 20 minutes, or yes, but can we do it tomorrow? But they will most likely tell you yes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you have to take control of it yourself and invite somebody into your educational space, if you will. Those are the three things. You said, how do I do it? Do I want to consult it? Do I want team training? And how do you keep it going? Those are those three things.
That's an awesome, it's a combination of all. And I love that, where it's like really empowering the team members to really own their own education. You hear that a lot from the hygiene side. You know, hygienists are required to get CE, and some hygienists are really excited about enhancing their skill set and really going I don't hear that as much from the assistant side, right? And I think also it's because sometimes assistants are made to feel like they're insignificant in offices and that they don't matter as much, and they're kind of the grunts, you know. I've seen that over my 20 years in dentistry, where, you know, you can see sometimes that vibe, that energy in practices, not all, but in a lot. And I love the idea of really empowering assistants as well to really own the role and get excited about what's possible. And I know you're a huge advocate for that too. And I think there needs to be more voices like yours in the industry. And I'm starting to see more and more people coming out with like dental support groups or dental assisting support groups and advocacy groups and mentorship and education and stuff like that. Like, hey, you know, you all matter, and you're actually a really important part of the business, and to not feel like you're less than anyone else in the office. So I think that's great. And what do you say to doctors who, one, like, say you have an assistant that's, like you said, coming up with x-rays or scans or something and saying, hey, doc, I'd love to learn more about this. And a doc who's like, you don't need to worry about that. We don't need to focus on that. Kind of poo-pooing the idea of somebody really wanting to learn. There are doctors out there that do that, right? Not all, but there are some that do. So what do you say to doctors around that, and doctors that don't invest in training from that perspective? Because I'm thinking back to a lot of, especially like you worked for Heartland, which is a major organization, but some of the smaller like emerging groups, I don't think they have, you know, built-in trainers like you were at Heartland. And I'm thinking they need to.
Not usually.
I think they need to. You know, or maybe share or get you there, you know, ASAP. But what do you say to docs who feel as if it's not like worth the investment, or like, we can just have somebody internally do this? What do you say to docs like that?
You're shooting yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
You want, as a doctor, they want a dental assistant that is flawless. They want their dental assistant to be able to have, they want to have the utmost confidence in their dental assistant's skill for infection control, right? Because that's just like one of the major jobs that we do. So they trust the dental assistant to do that. You want your dental assistant to be able to educate your patients and make it sound like you are talking, right? So I had this doctor back in the day. I loved him so much. I did all the consultations. And then he came in to meet the patient. He said, so what didn't Cherie tell you? Because I know she told you everything, right? So the doctors want to have that kind of confidence in their dental assistants. They also want their dental assistants to clinically function flawlessly, like with very little interruption. They want to make sure, they want their dental assistant to always have the burrs and always have a bite block and always have their patient with safety glasses, right? Mm-hmm. They want those things. And when they have them, then their offices are so much more productive. It's not as stressful. It's not as stressful when you have somebody in charge of supplies and you know that they're doing a great job, and that when you open the door to get something, it is there because you're there, right? So they want those things, but they don't understand that you have to have training to do those things. So they don't invest in the training. They don't invest in the time. Ideally, I'm a firm proponent. I the word onboarding is such a buzzword in the industries now, you know what I mean? It's always been there. But in the dental field, we don't have a good onboarding plan, because here's the deal. You put an ad in the paper because you need a dental assistant, and 9 times out of 10, by the time you find one that's going to fit the personality of your practice, you've been without an assistant for, let's just say, on the low end, a month.
Mm-hmm.
And you're so tired of working, like canceling patients or not being able to schedule patients because you don't have the help, right? You're so stressed. Your other dental assistant that's still there now running 3 columns is overworked and stressed out all the time too. So you need this person to come in and hit the ground running. I understand that completely. Been there, done it. I was not always a great trainer. I sucked. Because I would bring a new person into my practice. I'd say, okay, here's the cotton rolls, the saliva ejectors. This is the doctor's schedule. If you have any questions, you come and get me. And I'm running my other three operatories and letting them run.
That's what I see all the time. Yeah.
It's all the time. So I was not a good trainer. I had to learn that skill, right? But invest in your people. Invest. And if you give them, say, a month, 2 weeks, good God, I don't know. Give them some time to truly train. Give them some time to learn your doctor's treatment expectations. Give them some time to learn about the practice. Give them some time. Then you're shortening that curve that it takes to get them up to full speed. Because, you know, when you take somebody, a new employee, it's like a year before they're up to full speed, right? And so when they're not trained, they're not happy. I had doctors that would get so mad at me because I'm still learning what they want. And I had one doctor that we didn't have enough bite blocks. The first place, there wasn't enough bite blocks in the practice, right? And she would not sit down if there was not a bite block. She got so mad at me all the time. I'm like, what do you want me to do? They're in the autoclave. I have no choice, right? So, but it was like, it's a combination of things. You got to maybe buy more bite blocks, for God's sakes. You know what I mean? But if you don't give them time to train and shorten that curve, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. Onboard them properly. Give them a written guide of what to follow. You can't hold somebody accountable if you don't have it written down. Because you can come and tell me, Cherie, this is how we do things in here. But you told me when I was in the middle of sterilization or I'm doing chart preps or whatever. Did I actually hear you? I probably heard the words, but did they register and stick in my brain? They probably did not. So you can't hold somebody accountable like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You need to have things written down. You need to have a plan so that you don't have things like, oh, I thought I taught you how to order supplies and now you're not sticking to the budget. Well, did you talk about what the budget was? No, you have to educate them. You have to give them time to learn. So please invest in your people. That investment will pay off.
Yes. Yes. I feel like after everything you say, we can just drop the mic. we're gonna have you back on and have this as a series because I could talk to you about this all day. And there's so many more questions I have for you, but we're limited on time. And yeah, you've seen so much, you've done so much, and you are a world of wisdom, which I absolutely love. And you have an incredible personality and delivery. So it's like an absolute joy to talk to you and listen to you. And I can see why everybody wants you, you know, to help them and train them and why you had such a long and prosperous career in dentistry, which is awesome. Exactly.
Sorry, that's a Star Trek thing right there. Live long and prosper.
I think everybody knows that. Maybe Gen Z don't. I don't know. I don't think Gen Z is looking.
Well, they don't know who it is. What's Star Trek? We don't have any idea.
Yeah. Funny enough, I thought by now we'd be all living in those spaceships by now, but we're in a whole different simulation these days than I ever imagined. Well, gosh, thank you so much. And this was such a super helpful talk and you're just an absolute delight and joy. And I'm so grateful that I've gotten to know you and I 1000% would love to have you back on to continue this conversation. So thank you so much, Cherie, today for your time. It's been awesome.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, send me a link, girl. Let's do it again.
You just listened to The Real Talk of Dental. If it hit, if it stung, if it made you feel just a little more human, good. That's the point. This isn't about fixing practices. It's about healing people. And if you're brave enough to show up real in this industry, you're my kind of leader. Subscribe, call in, send your wildest workplace confession. And most importantly, don't clean up for anyone. The mess... that's where the magic lives. We'll see you again on the next episode.